Here's what's coming up in the Category 5.tv newsroom. Police Scotland has unveiled a new aerial drone system to assist them in searches for missing and vulnerable people. After initially denying it, the Nuclear Power Corporation of India has now confirmed that their network of nuclear power plants has been hacked. Amidst an already rocky ship following their response to U.S. sanctions in Venezuela, Adobe continues to falter in the eyes of users, making a security blunder that exposed around 7.5 million user records to the public. And an interesting and unexpected flaw in how smart devices work has turned up as 5 months after returning a rental car, the customer discovered that he can still track the vehicle, lock and unlock it, and even start and stop its engine. Stick around, the full details are coming up later in the show.
This is the Category 5.tv newsroom, covering the week's top tech stories with a slight Linux bias.
Sasha Rickman, and here are the top stories we're following this week. Police Scotland has unveiled a new aerial drone system to assist them in searches for missing and vulnerable people. The remotely piloted aircraft system, RPAS, can see things we can't to try to work out where people are. It uses advanced cameras and neural computer networks to spot someone it's looking for from a speck up to 150 meters away. Its recognition software is compact enough to be run on a phone, with the technology learning as it goes. Nicholas White of Police Scotland's Air Support Unit says, quote, "The drone itself has very special sensors on it. There's a very highly powered optical camera which allows us to see things quite clearly from a good height. Also, there's a thermal imaging sensor which detects heat," end quote. He also reminds the public that this technology is not for invading privacy or spying. Quote, "We're there to find people, people who need our help or people who are lost," end quote. Drones are becoming a common sight. Outwardly, this one looks no different from others, apart from a flashing blue light. But the data this drone gathers is processed in real time. The software can discern an animal, person, or vehicle from just a handful of pixels in a huge moving color image. How? Because they taught it to. Professor Carl Shosky, Dean of the School of Computing, Engineering, and Physical Sciences at UWS, said it could spot someone from up to 150 meters away. He said, quote, "It does that by being shown images, multiple images, time after time, until it recognizes what the objects are from pretty much any orientation," end quote. The term artificial intelligence might conjure up images of Terminator-like thinking robots. But in this case, it means a machine that can learn. The team taught it using hundreds of hours of footage of police officers in different clothing, positions, and situations. And there's another breakthrough. Professor Shosky said, quote, "It doesn't require sophisticated supercomputing. It really is quite a low-cost approach to this. It just simply uses a mobile phone," end quote. A search needs two police officers to operate it, one to fly the drone and the other to use the recognition software. Police Scotland has already deployed three of the drones across Scotland, and the system's formal launch will come on Thursday in Glasgow.
Mm-hmm. This is excellent.
Thank you. Yes, I agree wholeheartedly.
I did not expect that enthusiastic response.
Wow.
This is excellent.
This is the first time we've had agreement. I'm like, I'm out of place. I feel like normally I have to like stand in the middle here.
Yes.
This is wonderful.
What I really like about this is the fact that they used AI to train the drone to look for the images and filter out the rest of the data.
You know what I love?
That's so cool.
Our phones have AI chips in them now.
Yes.
Yeah. Like our phones, our smartphone, the thing that fits in my pocket has an AI chip.
Mm-hmm.
I love it because I use it for my camera. My camera has AI mode, and it is astonishing.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever seen a Pocophone F1 panoramic photo using the AI mode? Like, it is amazing. How
is
it just
the,
pieces it
is
all
that
together.
The one you showed us at your birthday party?
Yeah.
Probably.
Oh, yes.
Because we were playing around.
Yeah, we're playing around.
And I was like, okay, kids, move.
15
yeah.
Lukes.
Yeah, it was amazing.
My son was everywhere. He's like, hold on, when you move the camera, let me move to the next. So you go around and all you see is like, it's Yeah,
but the funny. AI pieces it all together yes. and makes it work.
It was great.
Yeah. Versus the old, you know, Cameras Gone By, where somebody has half of a body and half of a head
yeah.
and two legs sticking out of their back. And like, yeah, it just didn't make any sense. But the AI like says, okay, well, this is a person and let's put
That's
it
right.
all back
yeah.
together. But
yeah.
AI in the chip in the phone can now be used for like controlling this kind of technology.
Exactly.
It's awesome.
I also like that it only takes two police officers to use it, which means
yes.
that they can really do more active searches everywhere, knowing that there's not a huge draw on the police force. Right?
Yes.
Right.
So
but also,
this is ideal.
Not just a huge draw, but yeah. as a police officer, because I obviously am one. No, but as a police in the police force, like if your resources were so tapped that, like, you know how any job is,
yeah.
right? I can't go through the learning process and the training of, like, this big onerous
right.
system.
Right,
yeah.
but I mean...
This thing that requires me to, like, read manuals and then, like, practice and learn it. Like, they have to make it so easy, and easy is a relative term, but
right.
easy in that, like, the AI does a lot of the work so that they really, like, they just need a quick training, they know how to use it, they've practiced with it a little bit, and they can use it.
Right.
It's as easy as that.
But, I mean, you've got the easy aspect of it. I mean, obviously, it's going to be more than just, like...
We're simplifying.
Yeah,
yes.
of course. But
sure.
But the fact as well, like, I mean, we've had this in our area over many years where somebody will go missing. There's tons of farmers' field. There's tons of forest.
Yes.
It's easy for somebody to get lost. And, you know, and in some cases, it's
oh, yeah.
led to fatalities.
We've heard of that here.
I could think of one. There was a teen boy who ran away. They did the grid search pattern.
Yeah.
And then he circled in behind.
Yeah.
And so they'd already done the search, but he came in behind because he didn't stay
yeah.
put. Something like this with a drone where you keep doing the flybys, it's going to go, oh, hold on, we got him.
And, but AI can
so
grab
good.
It. And, like, AI can figure it out and
it
say...
It could be the difference between life and death.
Yeah.
And for that reason, I'm like, this is amazing.
And
yeah.
to tell you the truth, because the cost now will be so much lower because it's not a huge team of people, it
yeah.
means that you can extend the search longer, too.
That's true, too.
Yeah.
Two
right?
people, folks. Two
yeah.
people to find someone who's lost.
Right.
Amazing.
It'll be neat to see if they can advance this to the point where you can, I mean, I'm simplifying it, but kind of like a dog. You know how that's like, sniff that, oh,
yeah.
that's what you're looking for?
Mm-hmm.
It'd be neat if, say, it was a matter of a certain type of vehicle or a certain item of clothing. It's like,
why not?
You need
yeah.
to look for this.
Yeah.
Like, exactly.
I mean, we have the whole Amber Alert system,
mm-hmm.
and so often, like, my phone will
yeah.
go off, and it's like, oh, this is the vehicle that was used. License plate this.
Sure.
Look for this. I mean, how cool would it be like, hey, they're heading along this highway corridor. Get that drone. You scan the cars, and you go, I think that's it.
That's
yeah.
kind of like taking this and saying, okay, blah, blah, blah. Let's
right.
do that. Because
but, I mean, you could see how it could advance with the AI.
It could be used in this way.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. What we're talking about right now is the ability to find that lost individual. Like, think about
so
the
quickly.
Like the Alzheimer's patient who
yes.
who
yes.
walks out of the home.
Oh, my.
And where are they?
Yeah.
Like, to be able to find them and help them.
Mm-hmm.
That's what this technology is about to do. That's what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
That's incredible.
It would be interesting to see if they could hone in the skills for densely populated areas.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, I'm thinking, say...
Yeah, that's absolutely possible.
Like, think Times Square, New Year's Eve in New York.
Oh, boy.
Like, there
mm-hmm.
tons of
Let's
people.
Put it to the test, folks.
Right, but, I mean, how cool would it be
yeah.
to get to the point where they could... continue using imagery to train and go, okay, filter out this.
Yeah, yeah.
This is the image we're looking
we're
for.
We're getting. That's
yes.
that's somewhere we're getting. That's not quite this.
I
You're
agree.
Looking at person of interest.
Yes.
Okay? That's an amazing idea, concept, and certainly
exciting.
A technology. Yeah.
I'm excited about that.
This is not that.
This
no.
is like search
this
and
is,
rescue.
Yeah. This
yeah.
is like, okay, we've lost someone. We got to find them quickly before it's too late.
Yes.
Yep.
And it's Scotland
that's
where it's
the,
cold. So
sure.
really, we need to find them quick.
Yeah. yeah. And that's what this is for.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And as, sure, those technologies are great. The person of interest idea, that premise of like every camera, AI being able to hone in on a person, that's great, but that's more...
That's more advanced.
That falls into, like, what we were talking about with the Toronto airport, where they're scanning, they're looking for terrorism, and they're looking for people who are carrying weapons and things like that. That's a different thing altogether.
It is, yes.
This is helping those in need, and what this
that's great.
Is, that's what this is targeting.
And I love starting the news with a good news story. It's good.
Yes.
It's not, so it's not some sort
so
of like...
So
but it is interesting that we're taking that technology that could be used for those types of... Like what you're looking leaning toward and using it for just the average... Like, hey, like a kid who has walked out of their home.
Right.
And the parents are like, well, where did they go? Oh, by the time they realize that they're out of the house... Like this
How
happens.
How far could they have gotten? Yeah, exactly.
And so now they've got a technology that using AI can hopefully find that child or that Alzheimer's patient before it's too late. Mm-hmm. That's what this is about. And that's really an exciting use of this technology. And they are stressing that that's what this is for.
Of course. Mm-hmm.
Yep. It's not for spying. It's not for violating the privacy that's of the residents or anything like that. This is to help those who are in need.
Yes. Yeah. I'm really happy that you like that good news story.
Yeah,
now
me too,
on to
Jeff.
The next story.
Yeah. There's so much agreement around here. This is really weird.
After initially denying it, the Nuclear Power Corporation of India has now confirmed that their network of nuclear power plants has been hacked. Malware has been found on the administrative network of the Kutankulam nuclear power plant. The admission came a day after the company issued a denial that any attack would affect the plant's control system. The breach was first detected on September 4th. Associate Director A.K. Nima stated, quote, the matter was immediately investigated by the India Department of Atomic Energy specialists. The investigation revealed that the infected PC belonged to a user who was connected to the internet connected network used for administrative purposes. This is isolated from the critical internal network. The networks are being continuously monitored, end quote. It's not clear if data was stolen from the network, but the nuclear power plant was not the only facility reported being compromised. When asked why he called the malware attack an act of war, threat analyst Pukrash Singh, a former analyst for India's National Technical Research Organization, said, quote, it was because of the second target, which I can't disclose of as of now, end quote. While the attack might not have given direct access to nuclear power control networks, it could have been a part of an effort to establish a persistent presence on the nuclear plant networks. As a paper published in May by the International Committee of the Red Cross on the Human Cost of Cyber Operations pointed out, quote, the majority of the computer devices in the world are only one or two steps away from a trusted system that a determined attacker could compromise, end quote. The paper points out that, quote, preemptive compromise of trusted systems would make attacks significantly easier, end quote, and that establishing a persistent presence on a network could aid in such things as supply chain attacks, attempts to use software update processes, or other potential opportunities to move isolated networks to deliver an attack in the future. While the administrative network of the Nuclear Power Corporation was likely not a good route for such an attack, given the standards for nuclear control system security, it certainly could provide information about maintenance operations that would be useful for espionage or for a future attempted cyber attack.
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
So, then there's that.
All this information.
Well, then.
Yeah, there's that.
It really makes you think, though, about, like, because we've talked about ransomware.
Yes.
We've talked about infiltrations on networks and people getting hacked because they had remote desktop enabled and things like that. But but then you think about, okay, well, but my computer, is my computer a key computer?
Right.
And here is just a perfect example of, well, maybe it's not a key computer, but it has administrator access.
Yeah. Yep.
Or perhaps in some cases has access to network resources, network shares, and things like that. So if an attacker, an infiltrator, can gain access to just a computer on the network mm-hmm. of the nuclear power authority.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be the main computers.
No.
It has access to those.
Yeah.
So if they then gain access to this and figure out, hey, what kind of access can we gain based on this, they may not even exploit that. They may just take that to the dark web
mm-hmm.
and say,
guess what I have?
To the highest bidder.
Right.
It's scary. It's a sobering thought that... That's even a possibility. Like, it has happened. So yeah. now it's a possibility that any amount of fallout could happen from this, right?
I mean
it really just opens our eyes, for
yeah.
sure.
I mean, when you're going through the news story, I mean, my initial thought was, oh, no, how deep does this system go as far as, you know, could you overload the reactors or shut them down? Like, mm-hmm. but then it's like, oh, you know, you got the separate components because of the regulations. Then I'm thinking, okay, yeah. but if this is something that is connected to the rest of the, say, external network, not necessarily the internal core, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. maybe it's about a matter of shipments of, I mean, I don't know nuclear technology. I don't
theoretical.
Know how it works. Theoretical.
Yeah.
Maybe it's like, hey, we need to refresh our uranium. We got to get a supply chain in, or get some in, because it talked yeah. about the supply chain network, yeah. which is logistics. That's purchase here, get it here, do mm-hmm. it there. So maybe it's a matter of, hey, is there a uranium shipment? Oh, let's hijack that truck,
sure.
and
yeah.
now we're talking about missing uranium. Like, I mean, this
yeah.
kind of goes hypothetical,
yeah.
but I mean, the sky's the limit as far as the external stuff that could be impacting. And it just, it comes back to, again, the same deal. You have to think security, and it's not mm-hmm. just on your main critical components, it's security on everything. You gotta be smart.
And yeah. the thing is too, that the hacker, and along this line, the hackers who are responsible for this infiltration, they're not saying, let's gain access to this so that we can gain access to that truckload of uranium that's coming in. No, they're saying, let's gain access.
That's right.
Whatever access we can get. Okay, we've got access.
What do we do with
this? What can we do with this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. So now we've got access to order processing. We've got access to
employee files.
Oh, who knows what, right? Yeah. Like, it could be any number of things, but it's just an entry point. It could lay dormant for years, and they may not know it. We know from NASA that they had this dormant Raspberry Pi that was
yes.
infiltrating their network for who knows how long.
Hmm.
And somebody had just simply installed it on their network, and it gave them access through SSH to
right.
be able to access the network, which means, for those who are familiar with SSH, like Popey, for example, we know that we can create a reverse proxy
mm-hmm.
into yeah. that SSH device.
Yeah.
So that means we now have full access to the entire network.
Which is scary.
It certainly can be.
I worry that there'll be more to come in this news story for the fact that in the quote... The second breach wasn't like the non-disclosed mm. one.
Yeah. Oh, there's more, but we can't tell you about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, that also makes you wonder, is this a matter of, ooh, we got in here. Let's try this system in this country. Because, I mean, it's not like you're
going
to walk into Walmart and be like, oh, yes, I'm going to buy this nuclear security technology software off the shelf. Like, there's not...
You can do that in America.
but I mean, there's not going to be too many producers of software that runs a nuclear power plant. So it's like, okay, we got into this one here because they lack security. Now let's try this next
let's
level.
See if this
and the
one
next
is the
level.
Same. Yeah.
You know, maybe it's a matter of going around the globe and fishing for those holes until finally you hit, you know, the Moby Dick, and it's like, we got our white whale.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And suddenly,
it's true.
Yeah. No conspiracy
Scary.
Theory, mm-hmm. but still.
Okay, we've got to take a quick break. The Crypto Report and more of this week's top tech stories are coming up. Don't go anywhere.
Welcome back to the Category5.tv newsroom. Now, we're looking at the cryptocurrency report this week. And as the crypto report on Category 5 evolves, please note, we now have an official web site or web page that you can visit in order to keep up with the crypto report. So if you head over to our website, category5.tv, click on shows, and then you'll see the category5.tv newsroom, and there is a link directly to the crypto report. What that gives you is the average information, all the data that we use here on the crypto report in order to give you what is current for cryptocurrency. But you can see that throughout the week, keeping in mind that it's always changing. It's a daily update.
Oh, okay.
So what we do is we create averages for you based on all of the information that we're able to accumulate from various sources online. And so then we take that data, we create averages for you so that it basically kind of makes it a little more accessible. Mm-hmm. It's a little easier to understand. And things like being able to see graphs that just make sense to see, hey, where's Bitcoin this week? Where's Turtle Coin this week? It's doing really well, by the way. So
I can't wait to hear. Yes.
Yes.
I can pay you for those headphones.
Speaking of the cryptocurrency report this week, now things are fairly static, as a matter of fact. Bitcoin gaining only $123, so it's sitting at $9,319.80.
Okay.
So it's pretty static. Facebook Libra is still not trading. We've got Litecoin at $63.06, up a little bit. Everything's up just a little bit. Ethereum also, $184.09, so it's gaining just 61 cents per Ethereum coin.
It's not bad.
Monero up at $62.97, the US dollar equivalent on the coin. Scala, looking at the little micro coins, is at 0.32. And as I mentioned, Turtle Coin is a real performer this week.
Yeah. Yes.
Astonishingly sitting. Now, we're talking about a gain from last week at 0.26 ten thousandths of a cent.
Yep.
To this week, 0.43.
That's what, about a 60% jump?
A huge jump for Turtle
Coin. Massive.
And if we look at those graphs on category5.tv/crypto report, you'll see that Turtle Coin this week has gone kind of like this, and then whoop, and it's that one coin that's just going up, but it's a micro coin.
Yes.
So we're talking 10 thousandths of a cent. But considering it is a microcoin, it's very easy to mine. It's very easy to purchase or invest in, and very affordable. It's a good way to get in on cryptocurrency. Mm-hmm. But because of that, it's not worth a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have a lot of them for it to be worth anything. But seeing that trend and seeing that it is growing very, very quickly, that's really encouraging for those who are investing in microcoins.
Yeah.
But keep in mind, the cryptocurrency market is always changing. It's always volatile, and it never closes. That means it's open 24/7. That means if you go to bed at 11 o'clock at night and get up at 4 in
it's
the
different.
Morning, yeah, it's completely flipped on its head. So, like, you got to keep that in mind. And what our recommendation here at Category 5 TV is simply to only invest and only put into cryptocurrency what you can afford to lose. Because, if you take that approach, if you say, I'm probably going to lose this, then, hey, if you gain, you're just doing great.
Exactly.
But I don't want you to invest in something that, hey, if you lose, you're really losing. Okay.
Yeah.
So I want you to invest only what you can afford to lose.
Yep.
Sasha, if we can head back to your newsroom, because I know you've got a couple of great stories for us this week.
Sure do. Amidst an already rocky ship following their response to U.S. sanctions in Venezuela, Adobe continues to falter in the eyes of users, making a security blunder that exposed around 7.5 million user records to the public. Security researcher Bob Dyashenko, together with Comparatech, discovered the unsecured database. Adobe had left the data of its users on a publicly accessible server. Specifically, the researchers discovered an unsecured Elasticsearch database containing data of Adobe Creative Cloud users. Anyone with access to the internet could easily view the data without requiring any authentication. The unprotected server contained around 7.5 million records of the users. The data included personal information of the individuals, such as email addresses, member ID, country, date of account creation, subscription status, payment status, Adobe products in use, and time since last login. It also leaked information about whether the user is an Adobe employee or not. Despite the explicit personal information it leaked, the unsecured database did not expose any financial data or passwords. The researchers discovered the unsecured database on October 19, 2019. Upon discovering the database, they immediately notified Adobe about it. Following their report, the company secured the database the same day. However, Dyashenko estimates that the database remained publicly accessible for about a week. It also remains unconfirmed whether anyone else has access to the database during this time. Comparatext report states, quote, the information exposed in this leak could be used against Adobe Creative Cloud users in targeted phishing emails and scams. Fraudsters could pose as Adobe or a related company and trick users into giving up further information, such as passwords, for example, end quote. Users should remain very careful and be overly skeptical if they receive any emails that appear to be from Adobe, especially if it asks for passwords or sensitive data, or requires the user to click a link or call a phone number.
Okay, so anyone who has the internet...
Yes.
...has access to 7.5 million user records.
Yep.
Yes.
Anyone who has the internet...
Yes.
Think about that.
That's a really big blunder.
That's like anyone...
Anybody.
Anyone watching this...
Yep.
Do you remember... Mission Impossible. First movie, like everything that Tom Cruise had to go through to get the knock list.
I don't know. You're going way back, dude.
It's like all the rage.
You just watched this, didn't you?
No, I haven't watched it in years. But I'm listening to this story and I'm thinking, have we gotten like relaxed as a society that we're going, sure. Hey, we got, like, that sure movie's all about the super secure knock list, and now you've got, it's like, hey, we got all this information. It's just out there. Yeah, my grandma could find it.
I suspect if there is a are they an employee, yes or no column, I feel like it's from, it must be from an employee.
Whoever run that computer is not on the list of
somebody put
employees.
It online. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
But it's unfortunate that this was such a blunder by Adobe, because they are a respected name within the industry. I mean, everybody goes, oh, Adobe. I use Adobe. I know Adobe.
I go, oh, Adobe.
Right.
That's how I
like
it.
But here's the thing about, like, I hear the story and I go, if it was, oh, Facebook, I go, oh, come on, again. But I hear Adobe, I'm like, really? Adobe? Yeah. Come on. Like, that's the core of who I trust.
The people who make Flash.
I just think we haven't.
I know, but
maybe we didn't get relaxed. I think we just have never got to the point where we understand the importance of security, like as a general public. Like, it's not that they relax themselves; it's that nobody's ever been as secure as they ought to be.
I think as a society we've gotten too relaxed. I think we go, oh, I've got encryption. Oh, we put too much trust in the software that totes all these wonderful things, and we forget about the very basic security.
I honestly think I don't know a lot about Adobe's history, but I think that something like this would lead me to believe that maybe they've never been on the forefront of security.
There you go.
They're the ones who make Flash.
Oh. Okay.
Okay, but so here's the challenge with this one is you've got all this information that's out there. And right at the end of the story, you're like, oh, people, you could get these emails trying to get your login information. Mm-hmm. How does Adobe go out there and contact 7 million people?
It's not Adobe that's going to do that.
Nah. No, but how do you go out there and go, by the way, you're part of the list. Don't give out your information, but you might want to update it or do some sort of security measures without them going, really? Really? Are you sure you're not here to sell me duct cleaning? Really?
To be honest, there's no reason why you should ever be giving that information, ever, anyway.
I agree.
This is just another one of those stories that makes me think, okay, well, hopefully the people that I am in contact with on the daily or love or just general humanity knows that if somebody says, hey, type your password in here, you're not going to listen. Mm-hmm. You know?
This really drives us to that mindset of thinking that when we sign up with these companies for their services, we need to use fake names. We need to use fake account information. Like, because keep in mind, okay, so passwords weren't exploited this time. So, but it does go to show that we have to use a different password on every service that we use online. If passwords were exploited, what other services would have been exploited of ours?
Because,
like, if we use the same password on our online banking and on our Twitter account.
And most people do.
And a lot of people do. Okay, you take care of that.
I know. I just need to do, like, I need a cleanse of it. Yeah. Like, I need, because I've started, but then you get all panicky.
And things like LastPass can help with that because you can do a local dump to like a comma-separated value file.
Yes.
That you can then open into LibreOffice Calc or Excel or whatever you use and do a look through and see where you've used the same password over and over again.
Yeah.
And fix that.
Right.
Go into those services and correct it. And then delete your file that you've created. Mm-hmm. But it really just goes to show that, like, when you put your information out there, we trust that someone like Adobe, they're big, and we can trust them with our data. Like, we're talking about our address, our payment information, our financial information, and our account information, and enough to probably do some rudimentary identity theft. Certainly, phishing scams and spear phishing are yep. big concerns right now, because any customer who is exploited, like 7.5 million people here, folks, like, this is not, like, 200 people. This is 7.5 million Adobe customers who have been exposed.
And you're going to hit some people who are not very tech savvy.
And when those people receive those emails that look exactly like an Adobe email saying, hey, your account has been compromised, click here to reset your password. And it takes you to add0b3.com.
Yep.
And lets you enter your password. Now they've got your password. They didn't get it the first time, but they got it now.
Yep.
Yeah. And now that's the same password that you use on your online banking and your Twitter account, your Facebook account, and everything else. And that's where it all starts, right? And once they get your email account, well, then they can find your bank and they can say, forgot password, send me the email.
See, and that's why for things like this, I mean, maybe I'm just a little bit over paranoid, but the fact that I have 15 different emails... Like, some people are like, you're nuts, you got 15. But I do. I have...
Jeff1@gmail.com.
But I have some emails for certain things. I have some emails for others.
Okay.
That way, I don't have those linked systems.
Yes.
And it's just, it's one more little layer of security. It's like, okay, if I get breached on this email... But, I mean, even within those email systems, I also have different password systems, and all of those are individualized. So
can I just save you a lot of trouble and just say, you know what, two-factor authentication is the answer, Jeff?
Yeah,
I know.
So that if your email account got compromised, well, they've got your password.
Right, but not everybody does two-factor authentication.
But they don't have your phone. But Gmail does?
Yes, there are some services that do.
Just set it up.
I know, but not all services recognize that. I truly wish there was two-factor.
What service does not have two-factor authentication? And you don't have to say it out loud, but if they do not offer two-factor authentication, move on. Just move on. If your bank doesn't have two-factor authentication for online banking, they're banking wrong.
Yeah, banking,
move on.
Yes, absolutely.
Get a different bank.
They've got it. I don't think any of my banks don't have two-factor authentication. But there are services that I use, and with an organization that I volunteer with, they use other services that are pretty specific to what they use.
Mm-hmm.
And some of those are, you know, you can't get other options out there. It's that software and that service is individualized, and they don't offer two-factor. So it's like you can't go somewhere
mm-hmm.
else.
Mm-hmm.
And it's unfortunate.
Well, that's a huge failing on them. And for those companies who can't offer it, don't give them real info.
I don't think
don't
it's that
give
they
them
can't.
Real info.
I think it's just that they haven't.
But then don't give them real info.
Spell your name the other way. Like
don't allow it.
Joffrey.
Look, you guys want to say that in your terms of service that I have to give you my home address? Well, you know what? You don't have two-factor authentication, so I'm giving you my postal box.
Sure.
Period.
Yep.
There's no way I'm giving you my home address when you don't even have two-factor authentication.
Mm-hmm.
Period. That's how we as users have to be.
Yes. Right.
Because if we're not putting our foot down to protect our data and the confidentiality of our lives, then we're as much to blame as the service providers who don't offer those protections.
But I think a lot of that is industry mindset. And I think the industry needs to get to the standpoint of going, okay, we can't rely upon the public to protect themselves. We have to go that extra level. And I think so often it's, we got to get this out. We got to push it out. We're on a budget. We got to move. We'll deal with this and we'll get to that other stuff later. And I think that's a problem.
There are big problems when it comes to budgets.
Absolutely there are.
We're not even going to go there.
Okay. Where we are going to go.
Oh, Sasha wants to move on. Oh, okay, Sasha.
An interesting and unexpected flaw in how smart devices work has turned up as 5 months after returning a rental car, the customer discovered that he can still track the vehicle, lock and unlock it, and even start and stop its engine. When Masamba Sinclair rented a Ford Expedition from Enterprise Rent-A-Car last May, he was excited to connect it to Ford Pass. The app allows drivers to use their phones to remotely start and stop the engine, lock and unlock the doors, and track the vehicle's precise location. He says, quote, I enjoyed it and logged into Ford Pass to be able to access vehicle features from my phone, such as locking, unlocking, and starting the engine. I liked the idea of it more than I found it useful. The UI does look good and work well, though, end quote. Now Sinclair's opinion of mobile apps and rental cars is decidedly less favorable. That's because 5 months after he returned the vehicle on May 31st, his app continues to have control over the vehicle. Despite multiple other people renting the SUV in the intervening months, Ford Pass still allows Sinclair to track the location of the vehicle, lock and unlock it, and start or stop its engine. Sinclair has brought the matter to Ford's attention both through its website and multiple times on Twitter. So far, Ford has done nothing to kill his access. He says of the setup, quote, all it took was me downloading the app and entering the VIN and then confirming connectivity through the infotainment system, end quote. While he believes there is probably a way to disassociate his phone from the car itself, he's right in thinking it's crazy to put the onus on renters to have to do that, not to mention the security questions that that raises.
I kind of feel like this is like an issue on the car rental companies.
Yeah. Oh, I feel like they need to have like okay, add to your, like when you're vacuuming out the car, when you're cleaning the seats, you got to reset the computer.
Right.
Right. Like that has to be part of the methodology.
So what's funny is I pre-read the stories, right?
Okay.
So I, this morning, loaded up the news stories to pre-read them, make sure that I pronounce everything right. And then I check my calendar and I'm like, oh yeah, my car's getting fixed. I have to pick up my rental today.
Oh, does it have?
I haven't connected. I just picked it up and on the way here, but I am not
totally
going
to
connect it to my phone.
If you rent a Tesla, you can actually control it like a remote control car.
With my arm?
No, with your app.
Yeah.
No. So like totally like see, hey, if you rent a Tesla, let's see what kind of control you maintain.
I haven't rented a Tesla, but I have rented other vehicles. I mean, just my commuting job, I've had car accidents. And so it's in the shop, you get a rental.
Yeah.
And I have not yet rented a car that has Bluetooth capabilities that doesn't have all of the previous users who have connected data removed. Ooh.
There
was one that I picked up, and I chuckled, and I went back into the dealer, and
you spotted this. You're the user.
I have
you're the renter.
I haven't even left the rental lot, and I walk by, and I'm like, "Do you guys clear the computer?" And he goes, "What are you talking about?" I'm like, "I want to show you something. There's the previous. Well, I'm assuming the previous 8 renters, but there was 8 renters' Bluetooth information on there,
man,
including." Their GPS searches.
Come on.
It was all in the computer. I'm like, this is ridiculous, man.
See?
So
that is
like,
definitely a failing.
So we cleared the information. But I mean, that's like within the vehicle's database, not even talking about connection remotely. And I'm like,
yeah.
Oh.
But what's the answer?
Go to the next meeting and be like, I've got an idea, guys. And be like employee of the month for sure.
Well, yeah.
But what is the answer? Because like if the car manufacturers start putting like a kill button that like resets everything, then like that's the greatest gag. Like at a party, like just push the kill button on everyone's car.
But I feel like if you're going to buy, like
it's
you can get, you can contact.
You said buy.
There should be.
What if I bought a car that somebody previously owned and they start killing my engine on me?
Sure.
You know how you can put governors on the speed of like NASCAR cars?
Sure you
can. Okay, so there should
be like a... But why would you? They're NASCAR. You want them to be fast.
But they should be able to put like a security governor on that has to stay on if it's a rental car.
That's smart.
Right. Yeah, okay. And then take it off if it's a privately owned.
And that's where I was going, is if you are a fleet based rental company, like, you know, Hertz or something.
Yeah.
That's like, oh, we're, you know, Ford, we want to buy, you know, a fleet of 20 vehicles, we're going to put it across nationwide outlets, that you have it built in to the software that there is an automatic reset. And for a company like Ford or any other who's got the ability to program, go, hey, you know, we've got this feature. Well, it's $50 a car, don't worry, but it's because of the user data that you...
Okay.
This is like, a great feature.
Yeah. Gone are the days where there used to be a valet key. Used to have a regular key and a valet key.
Right.
And the valet key wouldn't open the glove compartment or the trunk.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
They need the equivalent of that for data.
Yeah. Can I just say...
Yeah.
We're having this discussion, and we've had this discussion for all of 2 minutes and 30 seconds.
Yep.
And I think we've got the answer. In that, okay, so these big companies that like Ford, because Ford is the example, why have they not had this discussion for 2 minutes and 30 seconds to say, okay, let's just say, how long have you been away from your car? Now, yours is in for service, so that's an interesting case. How long have you been away from your car?
Right now, since 4:30.
Perfect. How long have you been away from your car?
2.5 hours.
Okay. How long will you be away from your car?
Till
a
the
day?
11th.
2 days? So that, what's today? The 6th. So you've got like
a week.
Okay. Yeah. So let's say a week.
Yes.
So
I miss it already.
Are you ever away from your car for a week?
Vacations.
Pretty rare, though, right? So if I'm away from my car for 4 days, my phone app disconnects from my car, unless I approach my car and then it reconnects and it says, you've been away from your car for 4 days. Enter your PIN.
Mm. Yeah.
And it shows the PIN on the screen in the car.
That makes sense to
me. Just to throw that out there.
Yeah. Right.
If I'm away from my car for 2 weeks... it just deactivates the connection altogether.
You just have to reactivate it.
Yeah, and that's
like later. I mean, like,
or at least
like
let's just say, okay, on the screen in the car, it shows a PIN. And on my phone, if I have not been at the car physically within the last 4 days, I have to enter that PIN into my phone. It's a 4-digit PIN. Big
deal.
That's
smart. And that's a little bit of
solved
programming.
It.
That's it.
Yeah.
We solved it.
There you go.
Why the heck aren't they doing this?
This is what we do here. We fix the world's problems.
But that just makes sense. Like that's like stupid.
Yeah.
So Ford, are you watching? Because come on now.
Just do it and like call it the Cat 5 feature or something.
Yeah, exactly.
My car doesn't have Bluetooth though.
Yeah.
Big thanks to Roy W. Nash and our community of viewers for submitting stories to us this week. Thanks for watching the Category5.tv newsroom. Don't forget to like and subscribe for all your tech news with a slight Linux bias. And if you appreciate what we do, become a patron at patreon.com/newsroom. From the Category5.tv newsroom, I'm Sasha Rickman.
And I'm Robbie Ferguson.
And I'm Jeff Weston.